Ever since the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, the war there and then the one in Iraq have become major political and policy issues, but we haven't heard many candidates talking about them during this year's midterm election campaigns. Joining us for this week's edition of The Big Picture is David Sanger. He's chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and the author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Great to be back with you.
Last Thursday marked the 9th anniversary of the invasion of Afghanistan. In June, that war became the longest in American history. Have the voters grown tired of the war?
Well, clearly many voters have grown tired of it, but what I find quite remarkable is, as you point out, that if you had said, say, back in 2001 when this action started, or even in 2005 or 2006, the worst days in Iraq, that we would still be in Afghanistan 9 years later with a bigger force presence than we've ever had before, and that it wouldn't be a political issue, I think none of us would have believed that. And it is quite remarkable. I think partly it is explained by the fact that most of the president's biggest supporters on the continued American presence there at this force level are not in the Democratic Party. They're in the Republican Party, and so many of the Republicans obviously don't want to mention it as a point of agreement. And many of the Democrats don't either want to make obvious their differences with President Obama, or they don't yet have a grander strategy for dealing with the issue other than having the U.S. rapidly withdraw. So the result is that it's been somewhat muted. But, you know, it reminds me a little of 2006, which was the worst year in Iraq. But in the midterm elections in 2006, Iraq was not a major issue either.
Well, it's also hard to gauge progress in this war, and that may be another factor. But since the deficit, which is a major issue in this election, grows largely out of the cost of the wars, why hasn't it become one of the areas of discussion as the tax cuts have?
Well, the wars certainly contribute to the deficit, and right now it looks like Afghanistan is probably going to cost somewhere in the realm of $100 billion this year. Which is, you know, a huge contribution, but it is by no means the biggest part of the deficit. When you think that, you know, TARP was $700 billion, and that the cost of the kind of Social Security, health care benefits, and others that are major parts of the budget, the wars actually somewhat pale in comparison.
Well, Joe Stiglitz, a respected Nobel Prize-winning economist, says that the combined cost is going to be around, and this is an earlier estimate, around $3 trillion when you add up all the other things, of the care for veterans, foreign aid, and the like.
I think he's right, but your first question was, you know, part of the deficit, which is an annual number, and what Professor Stiglitz is offering is an all-in total cost of Iraq and Afghanistan over many decades. Mm-hmm. And he could well turn out to be correct, particularly with the hidden costs of care for the veterans and so forth. But that goes into, you know, a long-term debt issue as opposed to an annual deficit. Some of what he's been concerned about, which is the foreign aid element, would be there even if we didn't have combat troops there. For example, we've got major foreign aid programs in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan that will probably continue long after the troops are gone, and the concept there is to be able to reduce the likelihood that we would have to send troops again.
Combat operations in Iraq ended officially in August. Why hasn't that been something that candidates are talking about? I would think that the Democrats would be bragging about the fact that that Obama made the promise and he has lived up to it.
Well, President Obama certainly has made that case, and he gave a televised speech to the nation at the end of August to mark the moment when the United States got down to 50,000 troops in Iraq, and that all combat operations had ended. But for the congressional candidates and even the Senate candidates, I think their view is, first, it's not something they can take credit for, This is much more executive branch off accomplishment than would be an act in Congress. And secondly, it then raises the question of whether the troops that have left Iraq have in some way or another gone to Afghanistan, either directly or they have been replaced by people who have gone to Afghanistan. Because when you look at the numbers, when President Obama came in, we had 150,000 or so troops in Iraq, and we're down now to about 50,000. But in Afghanistan, there were about 26,000-27,000 when the president came in, and the U.S. is now up slightly over 100,000.
Do you think that we can expect to hear more about Iraq and Afghanistan as the candidates get geared up for the 2012 presidential campaign and all the campaigns connected to that?
Definitely, and I think that that's going to be for two or three different reasons. First of all, a presidential campaign is where foreign policy gets debated, a midterm election almost never. Secondly, we will know by the time President Obama runs for reelection the pace at which he is going about the withdrawal he's promised from Afghanistan that starts next summer. And so much of that argument may be over whether the pace of that withdrawal is too slow, too fast, whether or not the war is accomplishing any of its aims, whether or not the president has correctly defined the aims. You'll remember that he's greatly narrowed what the American objectives are from what they had been during the Bush administration. And basically, he identified only two core interests when he did the Afghan-Pakistan review last year. Core interest number one was defeating al-Qaeda and disrupting and defeating al-Qaeda. And the second one was securing Pakistani nuclear weapons. He can't talk about the second because of the sensitivities in Pakistan. So that leaves him entirely judged pretty much on the first.
Polls this summer showed that a majority of Americans are opposed to our presence in both Iraq and Afghanistan. In August, the congressman from Arkansas, John Boozman, was quoted by The Hill saying, "It really does cut across support in many different ways. You could find among conservatives, liberals, or whatever, there's a desire to bring this thing, Iraq, to a close as quickly as possible." Do you get a sense that Washington is talking about the wars in a different way now than they were 2 or 4 years ago? Are the wars still a partisan issue at all? And is George Bush's name ever invoked?
On occasion, you hear George Bush's name invoked, but the wars are definitely discussed in a very different way than they were in 2006, 2007, all during the surge in Iraq. So what are the differences? The first is that Iraq is pretty much off of the front pages. And when you think about the troop levels that President Obama has gone down to now, 50,000 in Iraq, in largely non-combat roles, casualties have gone down dramatically because the American troops are not out on the streets where they are more vulnerable, and because there is at least a temporary, if not permanent, reduction in violence levels throughout the country. And so the result is we've discovered over the years, Americans are perfectly happy to have American troops based abroad as long as they're not taking casualties. We've had 50,000 now fewer on the Korean Peninsula since the end of the Korean War. We've had many in Japan. We've had many in Germany. And you never hear about that because there are not casualties. That's why Afghanistan has suddenly gone from being the sort of forgotten war to the one that's on page one all the time. The casualty levels there are much higher than they are in Iraq. And the question is, can one replicate the kind of conditions that ultimately took hold in Iraq, where there was an uneasy peace among the different combatants? It's not all clear that can happen in Afghanistan.
Well, you mentioned that the war is rarely an issue in midterm campaigns, but in 2006, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were a major issue. Several war veterans ran for Congress as Democrats, most of them opposed to the war in Iraq. But we don't see any anti-war movement now.
You don't, and that may be a separate issue related to the draft, but let me push back for just a moment on the 2006. Yes, you definitely saw a number of veterans come back and run. many of them against the war in Iraq, some of them for a continued presence. And that was because, obviously, if you've had that background, it was a background that was very appealing to voters and established some credentials, particularly for younger politicians. But what I find remarkable about the 2006 campaign, which I covered, I was White House correspondent at the time, I was out was President Bush at the time was campaigning through this, is that the White House was arguing and President Bush was arguing that the United States was still winning, when we now know that their internal assessment was that the United States was losing. And remember, the surge began shortly after the election was over, the election of 2006. And we did many articles and shows like this in 2006 about the fact that the war was not as big an issue as people had expected it would be in those midterm campaigns. I'm not suggesting it didn't come up, and I think it did come up then more than it's come up now. But it didn't seem to be driving voters as much as an issue. And even then, there was more economic issues that were on the plate, or the question of whether Iraq had distracted the United States from other issues, including at home.
My guest is David E. Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times. His latest book, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts, and the Challenges to American Power. You can also hear David Sanger on The Washington Report on our sister station, WQXR, every Monday morning at 8:30. And we will continue our conversation as part of our big picture series on the midterm elections. Today we're talking about Iraq and Afghanistan right after this. We're back with David E. Sanger, who's Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times, and we're talking about the whether Iraq and Afghanistan are issues in the midterm elections as part of our big picture series, which is takes a look at the various issues of the midterms. Senator Russ Feingold, who's in a very tough re-election fight in Wisconsin, has asked for a timetable for Afghanistan, much of the sort that was put in place for Iraq. And President Obama has given a July 2011 a timetable for withdrawal. Are we likely to see something more specific emerge?
Well, he hasn't quite given that as a deadline for withdrawal. He has given that as the deadline for the start of a withdrawal whose timetable is very unclear, and which he said is will be conditions-based. Now, if you listen to many in the Pentagon, including the Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, what they'll tell you is that they don't expect to see a very significant withdrawal starting in next summer. Instead, this will sort of be the high watermark of the number of American troops, and there will be some number of thousand who will begin to pull out. But they say don't expect a very steep decline. Now, if you ask Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, or even if you ask Vice President Joe Biden, though he's been brought around on this some within the White House message machine, what they'll tell you is they're sure hoping that there will be a steep withdrawal. And I think that that may be one of the most interesting elements that comes out of the shakeup that we've seen in the White House in recent weeks. Rahm Emanuel has left, who was a big supporter of the Biden plan, which was going with a much smaller number of forces focused on training and conduct many more counterterrorism operations just across the border in Pakistan, but don't attempt a big surge in Afghanistan. Thomas Donilon, who is now about to take over as the National Security Advisor, ultimately ended up, I think, siding more, having more sympathies with that argument and pressing the Pentagon for further options that would enable a faster drawdown. So the most interesting debate on the speed of the drawdown is the one that's about to happen. It hasn't happened yet.
Well, Robert Gates announced that he would leave the administration before the 2012 election. And you mentioned Donilon. Well, he is a civilian replacing General James L. Jones as National Security Advisor, which would suggest a shift away from the military within the Obama administration. Also,
well,
wasn't Jones seen as by the White House as something less than a team player on the heels of what happened with Stanley McChrystal?
He was seen less of an insider and not terribly influential. And in fact, it's not clear that he played as major a role as one might have expected in the Afghan-Pakistan debate that took place last fall when they set this in place. But the fact that he is not there could certainly sharpen this sense of civilian versus the military that we have seen since the beginning of the Obama administration. Also, we'll know more between now and next summer. You know, as I said, the president had reduced the goals of the Afghanistan and Pakistan operation. So we'll know in Afghanistan whether or not his central goal, which is to turn over a lot of the combat operations to Afghan forces, will turn out to be possible. So far, in those areas where American and Afghan combat troops have worked together, the Afghans have not taken the lead in a single one of those regions. At the same time, the president has greatly stepped up the air war into Pakistan, something that is much less discussed, but these are the drone strikes you read about. There were more than 20 last month. By comparison, the previous year, there were 53. So that gives you a sense of how the tempo has increased. And it's Pakistan, as always, that is the far more complex element of the strategy.
Because of those, right now we're seeing those attacks on NATO trucks that are crossing into Afghanistan from Pakistan. Pakistan seems, if without Pakistan, no success seems to be likely. But earlier this month, Bob Woodward published his new book called Obama's Wars, which had a large section on the debate within the Obama administration about the decision to send 30,000 additional troops to Afghanistan. Are there major differences between the White House and the Pentagon when it comes to Afghanistan?
There are, and we reported a good number of them at the time. Mr. Woodward's written a fascinating book, as always, but the outlines of that debate were playing out in real time in The Times, Washington Post, other places, and then in reconstructions that we did of the debate that appeared in December. And that outline was, I think, pretty well confirmed by his book, which is that the Pentagon saw no other option than a major surge that would get the United States into a complex counterinsurgency operation. Counterinsurgencies are meant to secure the population, but they take a lot of time, they take a lot of money, and they take a lot of troops. And the initial plan that came in from General McChrystal, who, of course, of Rolling Stone fame and who was dismissed early this summer, his initial proposal was to go in with 40,000 troops and maintain a big presence for about a decade. And when that got priced out by the president's director of the budget, it came out to about $1 trillion in total cost. And at one point, the budget director at the time, Peter Orszag, made the point to the president and his war cabinet that that was about the same price tag as giving universal health care to the entire United States over that same period of 10 years. And, you know, given the choice between the two, it was clear the president was not going to try to sign on for what Mr. Donilon later called an endless war. And in fact, he hasn't. He has said we've got to begin coming down next year, but he hasn't said how fast.
Well, Defense Secretary Gates is quoted in the book as saying that the U.S. will never leave Afghanistan. I'm assuming that's an acknowledgement of some reality as perceived by some people. On the other hand, we have a quote today, Pakistani Prime Minister Yousef Raza Jilani said that any efforts by the Afghan government to make peace with the Taliban will fail without Pakistan's help. And I wonder if he's acknowledging how important Pakistan is to the internal politics of Afghanistan.
He is reminding the Afghans of that. And, you know, what's the reason that Prime Minister Jilani made that statement? Because you can't have a peace without coming to an agreement with at least major sections of the Taliban. And where are the Taliban based right now? In Pakistan. And Mullah Omar is there in Quetta. Many other major elements of different forms of the Taliban, including the Haqqani network, are based in Pakistan. So, you know, we're in this oddity right now where we have 100,000 troops in Afghanistan because we can. We can keep them there. There's a UN resolution that authorizes troops there. The Afghan government has invited them in. We can't have any troops in Pakistan because the Pakistanis won't allow those troops in. But that's where the far bigger part of the problem is, and, of course, where the current safe haven for both al-Qaeda and the Taliban are. And that's the core of the issue. We've got our troops in one place and the adversary in another.
Is there a certain amount of irony in the fact that Barack Obama, during the early days of the primary campaign, presented himself as the anti-war candidate? Now he's a commander-in-chief who's overseeing a war and an occupation. And I wonder how much of this has to do with the fact that Republicans often paint the Democrats as weak on national security.
Well, it could be, but in the president's defense, if you listen to him carefully during the campaign, he was not the anti-war candidate. He was the anti-Iraq war candidate. He said that Iraq was not central to the war on terror, and he said it wasn't central to our national security. He did at the same time, though, say that Afghanistan was central to the war on terror and to our national security and was the place, of course, where 9/11 had been hatched and where a number of the terrorists were trained. And so I think that his supporters, many of his supporters, were listening to the Iraq part of that conversation because Iraq was the big war on the front pages at the time, and perhaps weren't listening as carefully to the commitment he made to boost the American presence in Afghanistan.
David Sanger can be heard on The Washington Report on our sister station WQXR every Monday morning at 8:30. He is the chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and author of his latest book, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges of American Power. It is published by Three Rivers Press. And I want to thank you so much for being on today's Big Picture segment, our look at Iraq and Afghanistan, and why they are not being discussed all that much during these midterm elections.
It is fascinating, and always great to be back with you.